that ticket from the last, there's no date.
From the 400?
The date, yeah, that was the last passenger train that went through here.
Okay. Let's see, test, okay. Today is February 27th. It's Wednesday, February 27th, and I'm talking with George Mitchell. And we're going to talk just a little bit about, well, when did your father start working for the railroad?
He was 14 or 15 years old. I mean, of course, in those days, they only went to about 8th grade, you know. Mm-hmm. And his first job that he had was, in those years, they kept the fire going in the engines all day long, whether they were used or not. If they went down at the roundhouse, they kept the fire going all night. That was his first job, was stoker for the engines at 15 years old. But the first job he got was at Tracy, 100 miles away from here. Can you imagine a young kid at 15 years old working at night, and then 100 miles away from home?
How often did he get home?
Well, I really don't remember. But he'd go there for a week or two at a time. And then after he got 16, 17, 18 years old, then he was a call boy. And every time they had a train ready, well, then he had, those times he didn't hardly have any telephones. They had to go around and they knew where John Jones or Pete Smith was sleeping, and then they'd go and rap on his window. That's the way they had that. You got an hour to get ready to go. The train was getting ready. See.
What years was this then about?
Well, see, he was born in 1879, and 14, 15 would be...
93 or so?
Yeah. See, so, yeah, about 93. Yeah. And then as a cowboy, and it was, they had to go... Winter and summer, they had to go around and rap on somebody's window. They had to find out where the guy was sleeping, where his bedroom was, and then or bang on the house and say that. Then they knew that they had so much time to get ready to go to work. And he had ended up first as a brakeman and then as a conductor. And all of his family, the brother and his dad was an engineer. They had came from Iowa, down in Marion, Iowa.
Oh, is that how they came to Wauseka originally? From?
Yeah, he was in Marion, Iowa. Then they had moved up here, and then some of his brothers and sisters were born down in Iowa, and then he was born up here. And the his dad was an engineer. His brother was an engineer. His another brother was a conductor, a brakeman and a conductor later on, mm-hmm. as he was. And there was three sisters that died real young, but there was three of them that, one is still living, but three of them had lived a long life, but they all married railroad men.
Do you think that was because that was their social circle? Or why would they meet these people? I'm real interested in how that happened, how they would marry railroad family members. Was it because you socialized with the railroad men?
Well, in the town here, mm-hmm. that maybe three-fourths of the town, or half of it at least, was all railroad people. So that whether that had any influence or not, it's pretty hard to tell. But the... my mother's father worked at the roundhouse down there.
And what was his name?
His Atkinson. Mm-hmm. He was a car repairer down at the roundhouse. And she had a brother. There was only three in that family. It was a small family in those days. And her brother, she had one brother, and he ended up in Minneapolis as a brakeman on the Northern Pacific Railroad. So that everybody, but when I became and got out of school, it was the depression, and there was just no work on the railroad.
Did you consider it?
Well, we had thought of it. My brother and I think we had a an old shed back of the house where we kept our coal supply for the stoves, the kitchen stove, and that had a window out there, and we were always playing railroad back up and took my dad's lantern and always played engine and going through the cars and collecting the tickets those things. So I'm sure that if it hadn't have been for that, I suppose because we were involved with it all the time, and railroad was the life of everybody in the family, and that's all you thought of.
And what they talked about when they got together.
Yeah. And where the times were where my dad would be gone maybe 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and was always happy at those times to get him back in the house. But he was a real homebody. He never went uptown. In fact, during the war, I think they had written me a letter and said that he had walked on Main Street, and I said it was the first time I ever could remember that he walked on Main Street.
Huh.
When he came off the railroad, he stayed home.
And that wasn't always the case, though, really. There were certain bars in town that were railroad bars. And
oh, yeah. But he never.
He never did that.
No, he never. In fact, he walked the back street. Back the back street going home.
One way
signed
of
in,
saying
and that was it.
Being private in a small town, it's hard to have a private life.
So. Yeah. My dad's two of his sisters, their boys had worked at a railroad too. One of them ended up as a land agent. I don't know whether land agent you call him, but he was he had an office in Seattle, Washington. And he was quite high up in buying property and land for the railroad and that there. So that the whole thing just was railroad.
Where was your house? What was the address when you grew up?
The family home where I was born was 610 and 3rd Avenue Southeast in Waseca.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad's house was would be 700 West Elm Avenue. The house is still there.
Was there a district where railroad men lived? Was there a part of town that they?
No, there was quite a few of them in the West End, but in our area there was the Four Corners, three of them were railroad people. And the people in the three houses in our block were railroad people, and within a four block area, I would assume that about 40% of them was all railroad family.
Mm-hmm.
On one corner or another way around, and one across the street would be the same way. So I don't know how it got that way. It's just we lived uptown first. Then we moved down there after I was 2 years old, and we moved down to the 600 block.
When you're uptown, is that right on the...
Well, that's right back where, it's Duane's Market is now.
Okay.
But it's where the parking lot is the house that I was born in.
Oh, the parking lot.
The parking lot.
Is that Duane Star Market?
Yeah.
Is that on 3rd?
That's on 3rd Avenue, 3rd Avenue Northwest. And right next to the alley, there was a big house, a duplex.
Not far from Moon Lake, really.
No. But, of course, he used to go out on the island, and all of those people down there, the Gallaghers and Maddens, and all lived in the West End, and my dad... used to go on the island. In fact, to this day, I guess that island is on Loon Lake. There is a path that if you found it, you could walk right out there with, because that's what they used to do.
I mean, is that shallow?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
I don't know how much it is underwater now.
Yeah. Murky, probably. Did your father belong to the union, the Brotherhood of Railroad
Trainmen?
Yeah,
he belonged to the Brotherhood.
Did they have activities or social gatherings that you...
Well, most of the time that I remember, there was always a dinner, and always on a Sunday, and then that was the time that everybody got together. And I never got fat, but I think that you could have a tendency because all of the women were good cooks.
Because there was an auxiliary, women's auxiliary to that. Did your mother belong to that?
Yeah, she belonged to that, too.
So I have the charter of that, the auxiliary, somebody brought, or James Raycraft brought it in. So that's kind of interesting. And, well, do you know anyone in these pictures? Let's see. Or you were mentioning about... sleeping in the caboose.
Yeah, that's one. My dad always slept in the caboose. That was one of the places. Some of the brakemen would turn around, and that was too old-fashioned. A lot of them would go downtown and eat in what my dad, and I'm sure the most railroad people, it was always the beanery, a little restaurant. And they always call it the beanery. But he always, there was a, in the caboose, there was a, maybe about 3 or 4 feet wide seats, and then they'd put a lot of gear and all of that stuff. They'd have, it was just like a trunk, but along on both sides, and that's where they'd make their bed. They had springs in there, and luckily they never fell off in the middle of it. But that he always slept in the caboose, and when we were small, that was one of our thrills, was to. When he would be down in Rochester, and to be able to go and eat in a restaurant, which was a thrill for a young kid all the time. And then he always had plenty of bedclothes, and then we'd sleep in the caboose because if he wasn't being able to get home for 2 or 3 weeks, then we'd go down and on
take
a pass.
We'd
take a train and go down and. Stay over the weekend and sleep on Saturday night. That was the biggest.
It
was the biggest thrill to go down, sleep in the caboose, and then talk them into buying us ice cream and go down to a restaurant and eat. And
was that when you were real young?
Well, that in 8 and 10, 12 years old, and that so that in those days, I'm not that old, but back in I was. In 1920 and 24 and stuff like that, but it was quite a thrill to be able to go and if you haven't seen your dad for a couple of weeks to go down there and sleep in the caboose, that was,
have him meet
that
you was, at the train when you get off.
That was a highlight.
Well, for the record, how old are you, George?
63.
Yeah.
So that.
Yeah, that's not so old.
No. I always figure I'm getting younger every day.
So, well, you brought me in a ticket from the last ride in the 400.
Yeah, that was the last passenger train that went through Waseca. Well, now I rode down to. There was quite a crowd. In fact, they should have had going out of business on those passenger trains every day because the thing was full. But the railroad had only given about 2 days' notice that was going to be the last one. But I worked at the post office, and it was our end of our counting period. But I told them, I says, I'm going to go up early, and I've got to take that last train ride, passenger train. Mm-hmm. So it went down to Winona, and then we came back, and then they disbanded it at Mankato. Because it used to be from... it used to be the Dakota 400 that went from Rapid City to Chicago. And then they cut it out down to Tracy, then they cut it to New Orleans, then they cut it to Mankato, and that's where the end of it was at Mankato.
How long did it run? When did the 400 come in? Do you remember that?
Well, of course, years ago they used to, and I'm sure that most of these old-time railroad people, that there was four and five and six trains a day, passenger trains, three or four each way a day. And then it got down to the last one. But I just had to make sure that I got that last train.
Well, what was it like? Was it mostly coaches, or were there sleepers on the 400? I suppose if you went all the way to Chicago.
Well, at that time, when they were running it to Chicago, there was always sleepers. Mm-hmm. two or three passenger cars. It was a long train, and it was, and when they called it the 400, that was back when they first started that, maybe in the 50s. That was, they just named it, but it was a sleek train in an engine where there was covering, steel covering on the outside of it, and it was a real good train, but you almost got seasick going in it. No, it on that last because the tracks were a little bit out of shape too, and outside the fact that freight trains could run on there all the time, but it was quite a thrill to be sure to take that last ride. You know.
Well, when you worked for the post office, did you get mail by train, or was it
all of the mail? Yeah, it was always by train. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did we still get any by train, or is it all truck now?
No. Everything is all truck. Mm-hmm. You had well, back when I first started in 19, I worked in the post office from the time I was, at Christmas time anyway, from the time I was 13 years old. I used to help a carrier. Because those days, when they started out in the morning, when they went to work, whenever they got finished with the mail and their route, why, that was constituted their day, whether it was 10 hours or what.
Is that Joseph?
Yeah. Oh.
The train relationship to the train, to the post office, and how the mail came in?
They used to have a little cart. I don't know. I think it's still down in the post office down there in one of the rooms, one of the storerooms down there. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But the guy used to put when the trains would come, he'd stack all the sacks of mail in this little cart, and then he'd wheel it up or pull it up, you know. It was a two-wheel cart. And then back when I first started, and then they got a truck, a pickup truck, and they'd go and meet all of the trains and then bring it to the post office.
And when the mail left Waseca, if the train didn't stop, did they have a catcher? Like you see in some of these books that there is a mail holder, and then they would grab it as they went by?
Well, always here. The train always stopped here, because this was on the northwestern, it was a dividing point where they always changed the crew here.
Oh,
they changed the engineer and the fireman. They changed that here,
mm-hmm.
so that there was always a stopping place, because they had to. There was quite a bit of mail going out of here, and coming in, but in the depot or at the M and St. L or the Minneapolis and St. Louis was the same way. So that there was a train that always stopped here.
Yeah. Was the post office always located where it is now?
No, that building was built in 1937.
Oh.
In fact, as I can recollect, back where Roger Kanish's barbershop is right now, that's that from that half of the building, what used to be the old Farmers National Bank building, mm-hmm. on Main Street. That back half, that was the post office at one time.
Oh.
When I was a kid, and I used to go in and buy the stamps in there. And then it moved from there down to the front half of Luer Auto, Luer's garage down here. The front half. Those two doors are still back there between the showroom that he has and the back part of where the mechanics are. Those two doors are the same as when I first started when I was with a kid at Christmas time. Those two doors are still the two doors that are still there, I think. then that front half, that was the post office. And then in 1937, they built the present building.
Because this is what they call first class? Is that?
Yeah, it's been first class for a number of years. In fact, it actually got... When there's two newspapers in town, one was the Waseca Herald and one was the Waseca Journal. Well, the Journal was a Republican and the Herald was a Democrat. And the Democrat was a postmaster at the time, and that's the way it went. The one before that, there was a Republican president, and the editor of the Journal was the postmaster. And when the Democrats came in, when Roosevelt came in, then the people that were the editor of the Waseca Herald, they were appointed postmasters. it just happened to work that way. That
I didn't
every
know
town
it was
wasn't
political.
The same way, but it was a political appointee, which they have that's been changed now. But they went first class when there used to be a whale, a big, huge whale, and they had it stuffed or some darn thing, and they had it on about three or four cars, and they were going around the country with that on flat cars, on display. People pay money to see it. They had a little newspaper. It had advanced to these towns that we're going to. Well, then when they came here, they left the contract printing these little newspapers at the Waseca Journal. And when they were mailing them out, that they'd always bragged about that. And you'll find that in the Waseca paper, the journal papers, that it was a Republican paper and a Democratic postmaster, but they were the ones through their printing that paper got to be first class.
Oh, that's how.
Yeah, so that it was. In fact, at that time, I used to put names on them, and they'd get the names from telephone books or whatever. And my sister and I at one time were hired to type the names, and we'd have 10,000 names on little stickers to put on the papers.
Oh, and send it to everybody in the county.
Yeah, but they'd be way ahead, maybe a month ahead by printing these up here and those stickers to go, and then they'd mail them out, and. We used to say, wanted sleep for 3 or 4 hours. It was about a 24-hour deal to type these names.
And you get some money paid for?
Oh, yeah. We got, I don't know, so much, $1,000. It wasn't, it didn't amount to much.
Well,
I think it was $1.50, $1,000, I guess it was. But that was in the late 30s is when that happened.
Well, around the Depression, were there a lot of hobos or tramps going through here with the trains, or was?
Yeah, they used to have down where Maple Terrace, back in there.
What street is that?
That's on Second Avenue, Second Avenue Northwest on Maple Terrace, the senior citizen high-rise building. And down in there, back in by Loon Lake, that was the hobo jungle. Every once in a while, you'd go down there, or we were going when I went to school at Sacred Heart, and you'd look down in there, and you could see these little fires coming up from. There was a little cove down in there, and out of the wind and everything else, and then they had the it was like a little bridge or something, and down in there is where those the hobos would gather down in there.
Were they mostly men without work or? Traveling
Most of the time, but there was a lot of people that were. That was one way, the cheap way of traveling is to hop a freight, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, maybe 75% of them were just go from one town to the other and work a while and just loaf. That was some of them. I think that was their life. Mm-hmm. But you'd always see the fire coming up, and then I always remember they always could get a handout at the nuns. The nuns had a big house in there, and that was the first place they'd always go to get a handout for food.
Did they ask if they could do some work or?
Usually, yeah. They'd always a lot of them would always want to work. If they had any work to do, that they would do it. Mm-hmm. And then to get something to eat.
Is there anything else that we
can... Well, on one of these pictures that I saw in here, it was down in
Winona.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
And I'm sure that almost any of those old railroad people know that and I can't say whether it is still now, but down at the bluffs down near Winona, they always had what was the hill engine, and they'd always have another crew with another engine to hook on to that going up those bluffs, because it was a pretty steep hill going up, and a long hill around Stockton, Minnesota, just west of Winona, down to St. Charles and Lewiston.
So you needed a heavier engine? Or
yeah, but they always needed help with a train going up, so that they put on another another engine to get up that hill. And that's how we got down in Rochester to go down on weekends, because my dad would be 2 or 3 weeks on the hill engine, and every freight that went through there going east had to have help up the hill.
Yeah. Did they ever push, or were they always pulling?
I don't think so. I think most of it was always with another engine on the front and a pulling them up.
What car are they sitting on? Is that the caboose that they're sitting on?
That's the caboose that they're sitting on there.
Yeah.
The but you can see down through there was that's the caboose. Well, years ago the brakeman would always if there was no correspondence between the engine and the caboose, and the now you don't see it, but there was always that kind of a railing was on the middle of it, and you'd see a lot of times a brakeman would be going up to the engine and he'd be walking, which was, to me, was a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
But they were walking always. They'd walk from the, they'd get up from the caboose and walk the whole length of the train on top of the boxcars. And but there was a railing up there, but it was only about 3 inches high.
So you almost had to...
Well, no, they just walked anyway. But how they did it, it was, to me, it was like always like walking a tightrope.
Yeah.
But
I bet some fell, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But they'd get up to the engine then.
And these are, I don't know if they have any. These are all steam engines, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's see, I've got some in here that there's one there that it was pushed into a snowbank, and the people are they're taller than the smokestack of the train.
Yeah, this must be around here someplace.
Yeah.
And that's it's a Chicago Northwest. Do you have any relatives on that train, or are there?
No, dad, I suppose he's part of it, but...
Because that's a short train, it looks like there's just a...
Well, that was just that was a passenger train then, so that's a passenger car and a caboose, but that would be I suppose that was the snowplow.
Maybe the work train.
Yeah, the work train there, and then there was another one. That a lot of them used to run maybe from Mankato. There's no dates on it. That's the work.
Yeah,
car,
that's always the hard.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty old engine you get.
Yeah.
There's some people, I'm sure, who could tell by just looking at the engine.
But I think the middle one there, I think that's my dad in there, the middle one in there.
Oh.
But maybe those were the trains like they'd run on a short line from Mankato to Kasota and St. Peter.
Just, the short
that
trips.
That were those two cars. The two passenger cars.
And this is a derailment at Nicollet here.
Yeah, and I just looked at the date on that. I think that was 4 or 5 in 1915, I think.
Yeah, right.
It says 15 on there, yeah. In fact, I just noticed some writing on the back of it now. It was a... Yeah. Conductor, yeah. My golly. You know, I've had that picture and my sister sent it home, now I just read that there is something. See that there is something on the back end of it there.
It says August Schmidt near rear brakeman just sat down.
August Schultz.
Schultz. Oh,
Schultz. Yeah, yeah.
Just sat down to a big feed in the caboose when all stopped at once. Didn't spill over our dinner.
Sure.
he says. Oh, that's pretty
neat. That was a favorite of my, well, my dad writing it was always, if it was supposed to be funny, he'd always write the ha-ha.
Because I think we have that same picture, but it makes it more meaningful when there's a little story on the back.
Yeah, that's... And then, of course, they spend a lot of time in those days trying to get the derailment and get the car back on the train.
So that meant your father was in the caboose at that time, or?
Yeah, and he was a rear brakeman, and
so he must have been the conductor.
Yeah, he was. My dad was a conductor, and August Schultz, the rear brakeman. Of course, they always had a head brakeman and a rear brakeman. They had three people.
And what
one rode in the engine, and one with the conductor and the brakeman in the rear end.
Did they? What did they? The brakemen do? Did they? I always think of them pulling the brakes, but that.
Well, a lot of times they'd. Most of them, it was always for the switching in the yards. If they had, if they were going from here to Winona or to Tracy, and at that, in those days, it was 100 miles, and that was 100 miles, and that constituted a day, and took a day to get there. And then they'd